We'd like to thank Jim Layton of the Radio Information Service in Belleville, Illinois, for providing us with this interview with Scott Carlisle of Blasey Engineering, a division of Freedom Scientific.
We are very privileged to have as our special guest today a gentleman from Florida. He is a blind technician with the folks from Blasey, Freedom Scientific, a very talented individual that's helped us out of some jams in the area. We say a pleasant good afternoon to Scott Carlisle. Scott, thank you for joining us, sir.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jim.
Scott, before we get into the nuts and bolts of all this stuff with the note takers, so who is Scott Carlisle?
Well, Scott Carlisle is 40 years old. I freely admit it. I'm originally from Washington State, so I moved from one end of the country to the other. Moved to Florida 4 years ago. I'm married. I have five kids, counting my stepdaughter. Associate's degree as far as college education goes. Most of my knowledge work-wise here just happens to be just from practical experience and a little bit of training from college as far as to help bring things along and understanding people that I work with. I'm legally blind since birth and totally blind since age five. And I'm an RLS baby, and a lot of you folks will recognize that, I'm sure. Most folks today call that ROP. So one interesting note is I was the first totally blind Eagle Scout in the United States.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
So it's a little tidbit that kind of makes my life a little special in that regard. And I work for Blasey Engineering, as you've already said, Division of Freedom Scientific. Proud to be here. Great company to work for. And I work in tech support and also do quality control as well.
Now, since the merger, how has that affected you and your department?
Well, we've had a little bit of growth. Which is nice. So we've added another individual. There was a time where our department was split between Maryland and Florida, and with the service department also being split between Maryland and Florida, and following the merger, everything was brought down here. And it was planned, but things got pushed along a little bit better with that, and that really helped out a lot, being where we have all of our tech support people here together, and our service department is here right alongside of us, so we can interact more and do everything we can to make sure that our customers have a better product coming out of our service department.
There's talk about putting Windows into the note takers. If that does happen, do you see that as a good thing, a bad thing? Are there advantages and disadvantages to doing that?
Well, you know, a lot of people are going to say, and I'll freely admit, that any time you can get an operating system that's going to guide you through, shall we say, lead you by the nose, then it means there's less for you to have to understand. You just do. But it also decreases the power that you have, and it also increases the risk of there being problems with the unit, because that means there's more stuff that has to run behind the scenes. And I just assume stay with the kind of operating system that we're basically using now, which allows us to be able to design things that are going to be more mnemonic for our customers in the first place. You do an O chord, you know that means options. If you want to go into the status menu, you're going to do an ST chord, you know, and we can guide things right along in that regard. I can take any person and have them using our note takers, you know, where they can at least do the basic things necessary to get by on a day-to-day basis, I would say within an hour.
Would putting Windows into the devices make them bigger and bulkier and more costly?
It's certainly going to make the system requirements bigger and bulkier, because you have to look at the fact that Windows, look at your PC sometime and how much room Windows requires. Even if we used Windows CE, you're talking about several megabytes worth of space. Even our Millenniums that are getting ready to come out, the Braille-like 20M, Braille-like 40M, you know, this is freely available information here. I'm not giving any secrets away. It's the same information that's on the type light. It's 2 megabytes of RAM and 12 megabytes of flash with compact flash cards. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot when you compare it to a laptop, but remember, all of our files are ASCII-based. And so consequently, we're not wasting space on control characters and so forth. A file that I write in ASCII, whether it's Braille or text, if I were to write the same thing in a Word document file, is most likely going to be at least 10 times, sometimes even 100 times larger. Now, is that really an advantage to me? No. Is it an advantage to you? No, because look at it this way. You still have to save that file to disk or to compact flash. So how much longer is it going to take? 10 to 100 times longer to save it or reload it. You know, that doesn't sound like a gift to me.
You talked about the Millennium. As I understand it, you're going to be putting modems in them. Is that correct?
That is correct. They will have a built-in modem. We'll have serial transfer capabilities up to 115,002. So we'll be increasing the serial port speeds not by one step but by two, because our top speed right now is 38.4. On top of that, too, the modems, the big thing it's going to give you the access for is your POP3 email access. You have the same kind of access for email as anybody else using a PC. Now it comes to internet access. Just due to the operating system involved with the chips and so forth, we just can't build the buffers that we really want to have in order to be able to give good, fast, reliable internet access without having to use an external program. So at this point, you'll most likely still have to continue with shell account. At least that's my understanding of things. If I'm wrong, I'll be the first one to freely say I was glad to be wrong.
The shell accounts, those are kind of hard to get these days, aren't they?
Yeah, they can be very hard, and I know we've been looking into that basis as well for our folks and working on trying to do everything we can to improve things, either as far as getting a more accurate list on those that do provide shell accounts or just the fact of trying to find other ways around things. Now, our research guys work hard on this stuff every day. It's a matter of pride for them. It's not just a job, it's pride. And because they know that we're dependent on them. And, there's some special guys down there.
When you put out software, you put out an upgrade, what kind of testing is done to make sure it works right before you release it?
We have a rather significant group of beta testers, which includes all of our folks here in tech support, among others, both in-building and outside, people like Fred Gassoni, and Erwin Ha, or outside tech support guys, off-site is another way of looking at it. You know, Fred helped with the design on our note takers in the first place. You know, he's a brilliant man. And we'd all test various aspects of the software as when it comes out to beta. Of course, I imagine most folks recognize that term anymore, you know, when we do our beta testing, and try and make sure that we catch everything. Of course, it's not easy, and sometimes we'll miss a few things just because there's just so much that has to be done, so many different, you know, hundreds if not thousands different nuances that you have to try and cover in a brief period of time.
The records that have been lost in the move, they're wondering what can they do when the person on the other end down in Florida says, we don't have a record of your device. That's happened since the move. Has there been anything done to reclaim those records? Do you know anything about that?
That is not an area that I know an awful lot about. I do know that attempt is being made to literally try and track down some of the materials that were lost. Some have been recovered, and others, it's a matter of, a PC that was directly shipped to this point, supposed to be shipped to this point, did not arrive at this point. You know, it was not the fault of the company. Everything was done right, and it just did not make it here. And, what do you go after? Well, you go after the shipper, but in the meantime, that doesn't help customers. But we're doing everything we can to rebuild and help everybody out. And in the meantime, you know, we're not a bunch of ogres here. We're not going to say, we can't find you. We're not going to do anything for you.
Right.
We do everything we can because, again, you know, it also helps. That's another reason for having, the tech support being all blind individuals, too. When you got a service, the people over there in the customer service department who we work very closely with going, hey, there's another blind person right here. I need to help them.
Right.
You know, and they're good people.
Another issue that I was asked to ask you about is the issue of the serial number. When you send a note taker back to Florida for repairs, you have to have an RMA, which is a repair maintenance authorization number. So you have to have that RMA number. Well, the only way to get an RMA number is to be able to read the serial number.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to get that through a file or a parameter through the note taker itself? How do we get the serial number?
Okay. Now, on the majority of the units, the easy thing for you to do is to do it from any file. Mind you, it's best to be in a file. through a P chord, as in Paul, TH sign. Okay, so P chord 1456. That fact, the TH stands for ASCII question mark. And that will give you your serial number. That works for the any 640, you know, Balance 640 with the Flash ROM or Super Flash. It works with the Braille lights, the Braille Light 40, Braille Light 2000, the Braille Light 8, the original Braille Light. Unfortunately, it does not work with the Type and Speak. I'm sorry. I've fought long and hard, and you know, guys did everything they could, but unfortunately, the operating system in the Type and Speak is just ever so slightly different. So the address that the serial number attempts to be written to actually overrides a portion of the operating system in the Type and Speak, and it will kill the unit.
On the TNS, would there be a way maybe to put that information on a cassette when they ship everything?
That's a good point. Or, you know, maybe we need to look at the possibility, and I've made this point too, and I will repeat it again. Why not treat the Type and Speaks in a similar manner that we do the Power Brails, and at least put a Braille label on the underside with the serial number?
Because we've had instances with the TNS that the person in Florida says, "Can you read the number off the back, sir?"
And you're like, "No, I'm sorry, I'm blind." And you're going, "Well, can you at least, do you have at least a sighted individual available to you where you can get that information?" Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't, and we understand that.
Yeah.
Trust me, I have been known on more than one occasion to just write question marks in on their RMA number and take responsibility for it.
Okay.
So,
we've had some issues with some other members of your tech support staff, not you, but other members, that have given some bad advice and made some problems worse. I've wondered, and some other people have wondered, what qualifications does Blazy/Freedom Scientific require of their tech support people to be a tech support? Can somebody just walk off the street and be hired?
No, you really do have to have product knowledge, and have enough product knowledge for us to be able to sit down and be able to train you further on the remainder of the products that you do not know. Remember, we don't just deal with our note takers too, though. We also have all the products that we purchased from Telesensory, what was that, 3 years ago now? And those things that we've just acquired from Arkenstone too. Because we do hardware support on the Vera, for example.
I was going to ask you that.
Right. We do the hardware support and service on the Vera. Anything that has to do with the software side of it, though, we have to send you over to Heather Joyce, because software is their baby. It's a different mindset, and so we let them handle all of that. And besides, the software in Vera is OpenBook, which they take good care of there.
If someone gets some advice that doesn't work, or if they're still waiting for a phone call back or an email back, is there someone up the food chain they can talk to and say, "Hey, I'm not getting help here"?
Absolutely.
And who might that be?
They can, if they want to just call and ask for a specific, say for example, you know, somebody is waiting for a call back from me. They can go one of two ways. If they haven't received a contact from me, they can call and specifically ask for another tech support person they may know, for example, Stephanie Brown, who is our most senior tech support person, by the way, and wonderful lady to work with. Or if you want to step all the way out of the folks at my level and go to our tech support manager, I would contact Ron Miller. Ron is a class act to work with. He's a great listener, and he's a very knowledgeable individual. And trust me, if there's a problem to be dealt with, Ron will deal with it. And if somebody's given bad advice, we'll sit down as a group and find out what happened, where did they go wrong, and we'll teach them. You know, and it happens to all of us. I don't care what line of work you're in, sometimes you're just going to miss hit on something, because some of the time, you know, you have to go, what's the most likely problem that these symptoms are showing, whereas it could actually be four or five different things that it could cause, that could be causing the symptoms. What happens if you happen to get one that's got the 1 out of 5,000 chance? You know, you look bad, and what can I say, you know? And again, I will apologize in advance for that, because, you know, we just do our best.
Right.
All of us hurt when we make a mistake like that. We hurt because we've been there.
When you buy a note taker, what is and what is not covered under the warranty? Then we'll talk about the upgrade and the PMA. But let's talk about what is and what's not covered under the warranty first.
Okay, no problem. It's also good to see that you've got the current nomenclature down, sir. That always helps. No, really, Jim, warranty does give you 90 days fuel replacement all the way down the line, one year of guaranteed parts and labor. If we have an update that comes out in the first 3 months, then that's yours. Any maintenance updates, of course, that come out during the time, say, just like anybody who buys the July 2000 update, you know, any maintenance releases that come out from there, that's a free thing, period, through the end of the year, because that's just the way we work our stuff.
So if I buy a note taker, like, in June,
right,
and the July upgrade comes out, is that included or not? Do I
have
to buy that upgrade?
No, you should not have to buy that upgrade at that point.
What if I buy that note taker 6 months into the upgrade? Do I pay for the upgrade?
It comes automatically. The upgrade and any, and if you bought the note taker, say, in December,
right,
you will receive the most recent revision available to us, maintenance release or no, it will be in that unit. If there's a update out as of November 22nd,
mm-hmm,
then you buy that on December 1st, so be it. It will be in there.
Now, in that first year, does it make any sense to purchase a product maintenance agreement?
I always recommend it. I really do. Because if nothing else, it entitles you to free exchange units the entire through life of your of the maintenance agreement.
But if you bought the thing and have the year warranty, wouldn't you get that anyhow?
The first 3 months, you're entitled to a brand new unit. Period. And
no questions asked, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Okay. Following that, we have the choice of whether we repair or exchange. After the first 90 days, you know, we don't replace brand new with brand new. We can't do that. It's the way it is. You know, you may receive you're going to receive a unit that is like brand new. In fact, it's going to be literally like brand new. But a serial number is going to read a little older.
Okay.
Okay. Don't let it scare you. If you have a serial number that looks like it's, you know, maybe as much as 2,000 below the one you had, the specifications that we require on our exchange units are, well, let's put it this way, they're beyond 100% of spec. Okay.
And I'm assuming even if it's a rebuilt one, those upgrades we just talked about are going to be in there, correct?
Absolutely. We send an update disk with the units, but that's only in case something does go wrong and you find you have to update because for some reason the files, the operating system has gotten corrupted, and so you're just going to go ahead and we suggest you rerun the update, and you have it there available to you. Plus, it also has many of your what we call disk 2 files, like your spell dictionary, the update documentation already on there for you. So if you decide you want to save space, since we've loaded them in the note taker too, at least the major ones, but you're going, I don't need that. I'm going to go ahead and move these files out of Flash and delete them, or delete the files out of Flash and run the reclaim program, and then go from there. Now you notice I said reclaim. Now, some people are going to go, reclaim? What's reclaim? I've not seen that on my note takers, right? It's a program that's been out for a little while. It's a freeware external program that we have that runs for our Super Flash units and allows you to regain space that has been occupied by files in Flash if you happen to just delete the file out of Flash rather than moving your files out or saving them to disk, reinitializing Flash, and loading the ones you want. So it gives you three ways to take care of it. Reclaim is a great little program that helps regain it. So that, let's say it resorts the building blocks and takes the holes out of the, you know, the gaps out, in order to give you as much room as possible, back in your Super Flash.
When Jim was talking about whether you would go to the Windows based and you gave many reasons why they shouldn't,
mm-hmm,
does that mean they're not going to?
I can't say because I don't work in the research and development section, and they don't always tell us everything they know. For some reason, since we work in tech support, they figure we talk to customers so much that we talk too much. They tell us a few things, but, you know, they don't give us the full picture, and that's probably a wise move.
I've used several models of the Braille Light,
mm-hmm,
and every model I've always found, the clock runs consistently fast.
I have one note taker that it does that with, and I have another one that's just dead on accurate that I work with.
Yeah.
And another one that actually will lose a couple of minutes of time over a month or so.
Mine's 10 minutes fast right now.
And I'll believe it.
And we have Sue Peters, a rehab person, where every so often her clock totally, like, dumps for no reason.
Uh-huh.
Day, date, time, zip. And she has to reset, put in the 2000 day, date, and the whole nine yards.
Will it hold from there for her?
Once she sets it, yeah. But every so often she'll just turn it on and go to see what the time is, and it's dead.
I'd be interested in finding out what is going on just before that happens as to whether maybe her battery has run all the way down, and maybe her lithium battery is not holding as well as we would like to see.
Okay.
It's holding a charge well enough to save her files, but not holding a charge well enough to keep her clock up.
Well, I've learned the hard way. If it says battery low, you better turn that thing off and start charging.
Well, battery low is one thing, Jim, but it's not going to hurt anything to go ahead and work with your note taker for another 30 or 40 minutes the first time you hear battery low. Because 99.9% of the time.
I'm the 0.9% of the time.
Okay.
Because when it happened with me,
yeah.
I lost all my speech parameters, and I turned it right off.
Sure, but did you lose your files?
No, my files are there.
Okay.
That's the most important thing, is are your files there?
Yeah.
Okay? We can reset our speech parameters in 10 or 15 seconds, but give it a minute if you won't need to go in and change things in the status menu. But the most important thing is saving your files and also driving that battery down as far as you can, because the further you drive that down, the better charge you're going to give it in the long run, the more battery life you're going to get.
I was going to ask you that, if you should run it all the way down.
It's best to try and run it down as close as you can. You'll start noticing little things to tell you when your battery's getting dead, especially, you know, the speech may start to break up
uh-huh.
a little bit, and at which point, stop it, you know, turn it off, go ahead and plug your adapter in, let it set a few minutes. After it's set just a few minutes, you can turn it back on. You can even continue working while it's charging at that point, if
right.
you really need to do that. We try not to, but it's not going to hurt it really if you do that. But realize it just may take it a little bit longer for it to complete its charge.
I had a unit that would say battery low, and when I would check the status, there would be 25% still in
yeah,
there.
That's because the battery hasn't been driven down enough.
I drove it down. I did everything. I finally exchanged the unit because it was
right.
It was
sometimes the gas gauge will just not cooperate,
yeah.
And that's a rarity. It is a rarity that sometimes that does happen. They will just take a surge at some point. Because you know when we plug those adapters into the wall, what have we got? A direct access to outside current.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how much protection we put into a unit, there's never enough when it comes to dealing with our wonderful power companies.
Well, it would
and the
say,
power surges they give us.
It would say 24%, and then about 5 minutes later, it would say zero.
Yeah.
And it was gone. So.
Uh-huh. Understand. No. Well, as I have a Braylight 40 and a Braylight 2000 that I can run both of them for over an hour at 0%.
Problem with the Quick Braille program.
Sure.
And I think we discovered a bug in it, and I don't know if it was ever looked into. I got the Quick Braille, and I used it successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And I set up my Braille exceptions file because there were a few little swirly things in it.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, I couldn't do anything longer than five-page file. And if I did, it would create pages with nothing in it. So they said, well, the program's bad. We'll send you a new one. Got a new one. Same thing.
Interesting.
So I called, and I think I talked to Fred. No, I talked to somebody, and he said, delete your Braille exceptions file.
Exactly.
And I did, and it worked beautifully.
Exactly.
So what's wrong?
If we knew, it wouldn't be there. But we can tell you this. You don't know, on the revisions of our note takers as of July 3rd, 2000, you no longer need Quick Braille. You have available to you not only grade 2 to text translation that you're used to, but how about text to grade 2 translation?
Spell checker is a wonderful thing.
Yes,
but it
no.
has some weird quirks in it that I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
It does not accept the word ophthalmologist.
It doesn't like to see either.
It will as long as you put that into
oh,
your
yeah.
personal
yeah,
dictionary.
Yeah, put it in your personal dictionary, but it won't accept it otherwise.
Right.
But it will. But some of the words that it gives you for substitutes are words I've never even dreamed of hearing.
It bases it on the first letter only.
Yeah, yeah.
And which is kind of crazy, but as large as that file is, 86 note-taker pages,
sure.
as spell check programs go, it's itty-bitty.
Right.
And for excuse me. So consequently, you know, we're very limited with the amount of room that, the number of words that can be built into it in that regard.
So we won't accept light either as an L-I-T-E.
I've noticed that myself, unless I teach it otherwise. That's all right, it doesn't like Carlisle, so.
And if you put a website in it and you're spell checking, it'll say word too long.
Word is too long,
what
that's
that
right. It just means that literally the word is, it does have a number of character limitation to it. And so, I end up splitting my websites with a space at a critical point in order to go ahead and take care of that. Often I'll say I'm sending something to somebody like, say, hotmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
I'll always have at hotmail.com as one part and the rest of it as another. That way, and of course, if it's not too long, then I'll just save it otherwise. But that way, I only have to have it at hotmail.com once in my personal dictionary. So that saves some space, too.
Scott, we talked earlier about the upgrade. You said we haven't talked too much about the July upgrade that's out.
Mm-hmm.
As I remember, there are basically three main parts to it. One is the converting files to Braille Grade 2 and the WinDisk and the calculator. Let's talk about each of those for a few moments.
All righty. Now, in the particular, let's take them in, there's one other, by the way,
okay.
that is available, and that is a layout view. And it's
okay.
particularly useful in the, Braille display units. But let's go ahead and take these in some semblance of order. Let's see, the first one I believe you mentioned was the, translator, correct?
Correct.
Alrighty, let's go with that. That had a lot of people excited when we introduced this in Atlanta, by the way, because no more having to load an external program and run that. If you want to translate a text file that you have loaded to Grade 2 Braille, all you have to do is do a T chord, and then, of course, if you want to print a file, that's no problem. You just go ahead and do an F, as in Fox. Then, of course, you're going to give it a transmit parameter, and for example, you can send a no formatting with translation to Grade 2 Braille, which would be the number 2. Or if you want, for example, see what it, yeah, and then with formatting would be, let me see, I always have to remember. No, excuse me, one of them is, yeah, Nemeth 2, yes, in 2-3, and the other is 5-6, and I had almost had it reversed. Without formatting is your 5-6, and with formatting is your 2-3, your DOS 2-3 for serial port. And then, of course, if you're going to do it to parallel it, if you're going to send it to an embosser, then you go ahead and use this as a 2 chord or a 5-6 chord, respectively. But the nice thing is, there it is. Sends it to file. You can look it over, make sure you like the formatting that you have, and you can print it, save it, delete it. Go from there, but it gives you an opportunity to proofread the Braille document, or at least translate it from text to Braille, and get rid of the text file and save a little more space in your unit. So, me, I like to save space.
Right.
So, I mean, I have a BrailleLite 40 I use for my text files that, because of all the different programs and everything else I keep in here in order to try and help folks out as much as possible, I'm down to, it looks like I have 90 pages in RAM. That's great, but I have only 580K in my flash out of a possible 493K. So I try and save space.
So it's a good space saver then?
It really is. You know, it really is. And if nothing else, it just gives you that advantage of there's one more program you don't have to keep in there. No more need to keep Quick Braille or Easy Braille Translator in your note taker. It's built into the operating system, and it doesn't take away from your working space.
We also want to talk about the WinDisk. I'm still trying to get some exacts on that.
WinDisk is in beta at this time. Okay.
So how does that work? I'm still a little confused on exactly how that's working.
Okay. When you load WinDisk onto your PC, and then you set your note taker up to 38400 baud, and then also then you're going to enable WinDisk mode on your note taker. Okay? That is something that's built into the July revision. at that point, when you launch WinDisk from your PC, because you'll install it there, and then when you launch it, it will seek your note taker, and it will recognize it, and will read it just like it would any other folder on your computer.
So,
at which point, you can save files from your note taker to the to the PC, or send files, so forth and so on. You can. It's especially good for backing up your note taker entirely, folders and all. And then when you restore it, say you've updated your note taker, you initialize it, you don't have any folders left in there. Say you have, like I do in my 40, I have 14 different folders. I won't have to worry about creating the folders. All I have to do is do a restore from WinDisk, and it will not only restore my files, to it will restore the folders, name it and all, and put the files back in the folders that they came from.
So are we actually hooking up the type and speak to the PC?
That is correct.
And then we're loading a WinDisk software into the PC before hooking up the type and speak?
That is correct.
Okay. So we are looking at other software
besides
what we're doing with the upgrade.
That is correct. This is another piece of software that's going to be, basically it's like PC disk, if you've heard about PC disk.
Right, I'm with you.
It's just that this one runs under Windows and has more power and also speed.
And what kind of cord are we going to need?
Depends on your PC as to whether you're going to need a
to go from the
25-pin or a 9-pin serial.
Right, but you're going to need a cord to go from the PC to the note taker, obviously.
It is correct.
Okay.
Right, so you're going to need either a BNS or TNS 1, 2, or 3, depending on what your note taker type is and depending on your the port on the PC that you need to be going to. Okay?
Okay.
If you don't know, get a good description of the port that you want to hook up to. Call our tech support people or call our sales people or look in your catalog if you happen to have one. And if you, it'll try and help you figure out right there.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do what we can to tell you what the cable you're going to need as to whether it's a, we say TNS because the type and speak
right.
style port versus BNS as in the 640 style port.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as to whether you need, 25-pin male or female, 9-pin male or female, so forth and so on. Okay?
If you weren't using that, there would be other ways to get there by loading the file into a disk off the disk drive and taking the disk and putting it into the PC, correct?
Of course. Of course,
it's
always.
Kind of the harder round way to get there, but...
That's right. But for those people that still have the accessory disk drives and like to use them as I do, and that's no problem. But this way it also allows you to save files that you may have loaded into your note taker that could very well be larger than, you know, for all we know, you've loaded one single file into your Super Flash that will not fit onto a disk drive. Now, especially with the Millennium units coming out here in just, you know, another month or so, if not less, you're talking, yeah, well, that's the word from, I believe that's the word that Dick gave you here a while back, wasn't it,
mm-hmm.
Jim?
Yeah.
Then we're looking at units that have 2 megabytes of RAM and 12 megabytes of flash. Well, a floppy disk only holds 1.44 megs. We have a mathematical problem here. What happens if you load a file that's larger than what goes on a floppy? So you need something like WinDisk in order to be able to back it up.
Right.
Of course, then you have your compact flash. You go one step further.
Now, the calculator part of this upgrade?
Yeah.
I got to be honest. I mean, I don't use the calculator that much. Is there a real advantage to that part of the upgrade?
For those people that are using this in a financial setting a lot, you know, we have blind accountants and CPAs and the like, some attorneys, of course, that have to keep track of a lot of different numbers under various clients. You now have the ability, or we as users, myself included, have the ability to save up to 10 different memory sets for your calculator. And you can recall them on the fly. So you can switch back and forth as needed.
One of the things that you told me to do, and I'm grateful you told me about it, was what you need to do before you load and launch the upgrade.
As far as doing the cold reset, saving your files?
Saving the files, yes, sir.
Absolutely. Must always back up your files. I recommend people to learn how to back up their files in their sleep.
I've never lost files on an upgrade.
No, but
you have been lucky because when I just did it, all my files went to gibberish.
We always warn people, if you remember when you run the update, mm-hmm. you know, running this update may destroy all of your files.
Mm-hmm.
Do you wish to continue?
I always back up, but I've never had the problem.
That is good, because sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. The files in Flash will be safe as long as you don't initialize the Flash when you're done. But the files in RAM are the ones that are most vulnerable, and they may or may not be destroyed. So it's always best to back up. In fact, even if you're not updating, depending on the criticality of the files that you're using and working with, I'd be backing up anywhere from monthly, weekly, to daily.
Mm-hmm.
I know some professional writers, they back up twice a day.
Twice a
day?
Files
they work with.
Sure.
They back up because of what they do and how much they write. They back up twice daily the files they worked in at that time. They only back up the ones they worked in. They don't do a total backup.
The new units that are coming out, the Millennium units.
Correct.
Will there be a big price difference?
Would you believe, say, for example, the Braillite 20M, my understanding, the price is supposed to be $3,995 as opposed to, was it, $34.95 on the Braillite 2000.
Can you do an upgrade? Like,
yes, you
like
can.
If I have a Braillite,
they're
going to
let you trade it in, are they not, Scott?
Yes, sir.
You can trade up by adding $500
right.
or whatever.
I don't have the exact price on the older Braillite. Say if you bought it, say, a year or two ago, I don't have the exact value on that.
Can you give us a rough idea?
Well, I can tell you that those Braillites purchased after July 1 is going to be $500.
Okay.
Maybe and I wouldn't be surprised for a limited time, but please don't hold me to this, folks, because I, you know,
Scott Carlisle.
That's right, because you know I don't know, but I, knowing our marketing guys and the way they are, and the way they just, we just love our customer base. I would not be at all surprised if we have at least some short term, real hot deals for folks for moving on from the Braillite to the Braillite Millenniums.
Hmm.
And you're like the Braillite 40, you know, that price is at $54.95,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, try $59.95 for the Millennium 40 or the 40M.
Yeah.
Okay.
With the addition of the modem and the email thing.
That's right.
That would be,
let alone don't forget about the.
But you still got to buy a shell account.
Techlite. Yeah.
We're still dealing with the shell account issue. That's.
I understand that. That's kind of crusty.
And it's kind of tough because not a lot of providers that I know of, we're talking internet providers,
there
still
are
even
a couple of national ones, by
I
the way.
I saw the Braille Forum carried something a couple of months ago. We have shell accounts.
That's right.
And I don't know what the name of the company
yeah,
is.
Yeah, but I bet they're going to be awful expensive.
Not really. Not any more than having a standard ISP.
Okay.
That's my understanding, anyway. Sometimes less, by the way.
We talked about disk. One of the things that you told me about was that I didn't know about formatting disk.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're sitting there with an IBM formatted disk, you told me that we should format it anyhow. Why?
Absolutely. Because the quality of the disk drive that is installed on the average PC, no offense to Dell, Gateway, or otherwise, but not everybody has a high, a high-end PC. Or maybe they bought, or they don't have a high-end PC from a high-end manufacturer. Do you understand where I'm coming from? They're going to cut corners, and one of the ways is to have, give you a high-end modem, or they got to give you a low-end something in order to keep the price down, or you have to pay more. Well, the first thing that gets sacrificed is the disk drive. Most of the disk drives that go into PCs would cost you on the street anywhere from $5 to $15. Okay? Whereas, the disk drives that we use, and this is a major reason why they cost so much when you buy our accessory disk drive, is literally the best the money can buy. And so consequently, its reliability and alignment are very, very tight. I know some people are going to say, what do you mean reliability? I've had to exchange more disk drives than I know what to do with. Well, that's partly because they're doing one of two things. They're either using diskettes that have been formatted on a PC rather than being formatted on the disk drive, or say they're using diskettes that were formatted on a different, on a, say, an older disk drive, and files that are formatted on a disk formatted from our older DD1s will not always transfer over to the DD2. Why? We don't always know, except maybe just the fact that this is the age of equipment. You know, there are going to be hardware changes, hardware breakdowns, that where it'll continue to work and work for you, but it won't work when you move it over to another unit. It's just like buying a zip drive nowadays. Did you know if you buy a zip drive, the all-popular zip drive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Many people have them. Do you know within just a matter of a few months, within 95% of those zip drives are not going to read any. You're not going to be able to read anybody else's zip cartridges except your own.
Why is that?
Breakdown.
The unified Braille code. How is that going to affect Braille lights and note takers and Braille displays?
We just changed the translation table that goes into our software.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's as simple as that. That's what has to be done. It may increase the size of the op system a little bit to begin with, but what do we do? We just have to sit down and change the translation software,
mm-hmm.
The translation table that goes in for our software.
Okay.
Can it be done? My understanding is there shouldn't be any problem whatsoever. Teach them once and they don't have to be relearning all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the changes that are in there are so cumbersome. They make the writing of the Constitution look simple.
Yeah, that's kind of my concern. I mean, do I really need 8 different quotation marks?
Quite so.
Just because they have them in print, do I need them as a Braille reader? I don't think I do. But
no, keep it simple. But
yeah.
I do like the idea of somebody not having to sit down and learn literary Braille. Then all of a sudden they're going to take music, so now they have to learn music notation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then they're going into their chemistry, so now they have to learn Nemeth code.
Yeah.
And whereas, consequently, if you do have UBC, well, then you just learn it once when you're a child, when it's easiest to learn. At least talking about kids, you know, at that point. Adults, I don't know, a lot of adults that are going to worry about switching over to UBC as far as from the adult standpoint of working with things. It would take a long time for
mm-hmm.
it to really affect us.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Scott, with these modems that you're putting into Millenniums and...
Yeah.
What we've talked about in going from note takers to PCs and back. Are we, and especially with the modems you're putting in the Millennium, are these new people that are going to be using these new note takers with Millenniums that may have never used email or whatever before, are they going to be running a risk of getting a virus and end up on their system?
Should not have a problem in that regard. 99% of the viruses you work with, by the way, attack MS Outlook. 99% of them. And then another, by the way, 99% of those you hear about
mm-hmm.
aren't. Literally don't exist. Did you know most of the spam that you see on the Internet? We all have heard about spam on the Internet, yeah?
Right.
Did you know most of that are virus alerts that are pure ploys?
I heard a rumor that Lazy was going to start at least make an attempt to work on Opticons.
Yes, in fact, we are still doing research on the Opticon. We have an extremely brilliant research engineer working on that. I'll tell you, I wish I could tell you his background entirely, but it's so long it'd take the whole rest of our time to tell you. That gives you an idea of what this guy's qualifications. But one of the things he is working on very seriously is a revamped, up-to-date Opticon. Okay? That is being that has not been thrown out as in non-feasible. It is, to my knowledge, still there. At least that's what I was told. It's still in the research department, cooking away, as of last month when I last asked about it.
You mentioned a little bit ago you were working support on the Vera. Are you doing anything special with that?
For the most part, it's just hardware support as far as which. Generally ends up meaning, because the Vera is so simple, if something really goes wrong, it more often than not would have to come in for repair unless it's a software-related issue that they can solve over at HJ.
What is anything new coming out with the Vera we need to know about?
Nothing that I know about. unless they're changing software, where that's going to affect the open book, which of course it will then affect Vera. For the good, because
right.
that's open book in it. You know what Vera is.
Right, Vera is a standalone.
Right, basically it's just a PC inside of a box that boots straight up into, goes into Windows and boots straight into Vera.
Right.
And straight into open book.
Before I let you go, real quickly, tell us about those multiple phone books we were talking about, and then we'll leave.
So for those people who would like to be able to have more than one phone book file in their note taker, read your Update 99 file, look in your help file, learn about the phone.fld. You can even copy a sample from your help file. That will help you in creating one. Just make sure you then, once you copy it, go in and delete all the line feeds, because otherwise it won't read it properly. Okay?
Okay.
Our note takers do not like line feeds between paragraphs. It doesn't recognize paragraphs properly then. That's just a standard thing. So get rid of them. It'll give you a sample FLD file, and you can go play from there.
And if someone has a question about that ever popular password, they can talk to you off-air because of the sensitivity?
That is correct. We like to be able to guarantee that the person we're working with is also the owner of the unit when they're wanting to break a password, trying to get into a password protected file. We have had situations where individuals have gotten hold of somebody else's note taker with a password protected file and tried to access that file that does not belong to them.
We'll stick the Blazy cops on them.
Exactly.
If someone wanted to ask you a question, give us a phone number and an email address, Scott.
All right. You can contact our tech support and service departments at area 561-223-6443. You can reach me at extension 2035. You can email our general tech support at support@blazy.com. Or you may reach me directly at scott@blazy.com.
With two T's.
That is correct. Scott with two T's. Blazy being B-L-A-Z-I-E.
That's Scott Carlisle, a blind technician with Blazy, a division of Freedom Scientific. Scott wanted me to make one addition. If you have a system failure with a note taker in the first 30 days, you will receive a brand new note taker. After those first 30 days, you will get an exchange of a refurbished note taker that Scott says will be just like brand new. I'm Jim Layton in Belleville for Radio Information Service and for ACB Radio.